Welcome to the episode 54 of the Josh Scanlon podcast, my friends. It is a sunny, hot day here in Alpharetta, Georgia, July 12th, 2018. And we're going to talk about today about more of my study and research on how to be happy in retirement. Because I'm telling you, I had a great experience with a client yesterday, and this just reiterated everything that I've come to see in my 20-odd years of being a professional financial planner. So this is a relatively new widow, and I've known her for a long, long time. Knew her husband, and he suddenly died last year. Just sad, and she wasn't ready for it, and he obviously wasn't ready for it. And all the planning they did for travel and all that in retirement just went out the window. Horrible. And I hate to say it, but this happens all the time. I hear this all the time. The best laid plans, whatever. But anyway, so at the end of the day, the sudden loss really set her back where she's like, I don't even know where to turn. I can't calculate the numbers. So we just got to chat and we were able to do some good work for her and put together a real good plan. And it wasn't just because of me, but her ability to verbalize what was on her mind and kind of talk with me, and I'm talking with her, and we're just kind of going back and forth. And it's just a verbalization, knowing that there's a partner you can rely on to help you is a big deal. And that was wonderful, but also helps the fact that we can crunch the numbers. So ultimately, and I'll brief you on what happened to her, and then I'll go into a little bit more what I want to talk about, is that we were able to come up with a plan in which she was going to pay. She was getting her survivor benefit from Social Security, but she's only 61 right now. So a survivor benefit before her full retirement age, which is 66, I think she said 4 months, is going to be reduced. All right. You're going to get a less of a benefit because you're before your full retirement age. You can actually get a survivor benefit off your ex's Social Security as young as age of 60, which again is going to be reduced. And she just defaulted to it because she just lost her husband, for heaven's sake. She wasn't thinking clearly. And also on top of that, I mean, she's not a professional financial planner. But we got to talk, and it was the best way to do it is to defer that. And basically, she's going to cancel her claims. She's going to basically cancel her filing and pay back the money she's received the last couple of months. And then we'll revisit this when she's 65, when Medicare kicks in. They'll still be reduced a little bit, but at the end of the day, it's fine. And the reason being is because at the end of the day, her concern was she going to have to pay, run out of, sell the house, not be able to afford cable, all this kind of stuff. And that's just not, it's just, that wasn't an issue that's really of a concern. I mean, if you look at it from the 30,000 bird's eye view, because she had ample resources in which to cover her costs. And so we're shooting for $3,000 a month. And the fact that she has no mortgage makes that a whole lot easier for sure. So at the end of the day, long story short, we came up with a plan. We're going to annuitize a portion of her IRA annuity because she has an IRA annuity, but I think it's like $100,000 or something like that. So I figured we'd probably be able to get $5,500 off that, maybe $5,000, $6,000 a year off that annuity. And that comes just every single month, like a monthly paycheck. She has a small pension over at the hospital she's to work at, and then come 65 years old, she'll have her Social Security. So with her Social Security, her pension, and the annuity, she'll have that $3,000 a month covered without question. And then we can, if we need to tap in other assets to supplement, to augment income, we can. It's easy. But at the end of the day, her income needs are covered, and she won't have to eat cat food and won't have to eat ramen noodles and can keep the cable TV on. And you can just hear the relief in her voice from that. It's not anything fancy like we're going to get a 25% rate of return on your investments. I mean, silly in that regard. It's just the fact her income needs will be covered. And that's wonderful. And on top of that, given that we're doing it this way, we're stretching her IRA payments out over her lifetime. It'll be more tax efficient. Social Security is the most tax efficient thing you can have other than a Roth IRA. And then, she'll have minimal income and very, very minimal, if any, taxation at all. So it's a wonderful plan. And the whole point revolves around the fact she doesn't have a mortgage, that she can be very, very nimble in terms of the income she needs. And as a widow with two dogs, you don't need a whole lot of income. That's just a fact. She'll have some liquid assets in the future if she needs to, but she's comfortable with that. And that's a wonderful feeling. So listen, why do I bring this up? Because I was looking through some of my old studies, and I came across one from the Center for retirement research at Boston College. Now, this goes back to January 2005. And so some folks will say that's antiquated, and I'm just telling you it's not. Because the headline is, what makes retirees happy? And I've kept this article, I mean, going on almost 20 years now, because nothing has changed. In fact, if anything, we have more studies that validate this guy's study from Boston College. And basically, the premise is at the end of the day, there's certain things that retirees do or have done that makes them happy, and certain things that retirees do or have done that doesn't make them happy. And the actual dollar amount of your net worth is not one of them. It's just not. Now, that doesn't mean if you're poor, you're going to be happy, and if someone's rich, won't be. But it just means at the end of the day, the actual dollars that you have are secondary compared to other things. And just real brief, and I want to dive into some of the findings that are important to me. But one of the things that was interesting about not being happy was men in particularly who are forced out of their work. All right, they're forced out from layoff, from downside, whatever it is. And so they retired early, but no reason on their own. And they are not happy in retirement. And I mean, some are, don't get me wrong, but a lot of others are not, because a lot of these guys got their sense of being and worth through work. And I just thought that's pretty interesting. And again, this is 2005. I'm certain the numbers haven't changed much. In fact, in one of my previous podcasts, episode 10, we talked about a Washington Post article that had some professors up in, I think it's Toronto, that did some studies on retiree happiness and whatnot, and homogenous society, going to church, not having a lot of expenses. All these three things were huge. A sense of community, living in the same house for 15 years. And that was just literally last year that they did that study. So a lot of these things are just human nature, regardless of the era we're living in. But anyway, so if you're a man, you get put out and you're 62 years old, you're probably not going to be very happy, because you're thinking you're not going to be able to find another job. And on top of that, you liked what you were doing, or at least it gave you a sense of worth. And now that sense of worth is gone. So that's one rare area where men aren't happy in retirement, for sure. But I do want to talk about, so it's Kenneth Bender and Natalia Javon from Boston College. And while I say the area of research on how retirees are happy is important, focusing on just the economic well-being of individuals may miss other factors that influence overall welfare. And I think that's 100% true. Indeed, there has been a lack of research on other aspects of well-being for retirees in the economics literature. And this brief, Bender and Javon are going to attempt to fill that void. And one thing he says, so going into the intro, he says, finding some previous studies, measures of retiree well-being have focused primarily on two economic measures, retirement income and wealth. And research on these measures often attempts to identify factors that lead to higher levels of income or wealth, assuming that more money leads to overall well-being. And that's the assumption, assuming that more money leads to overall well-being, i.e. retirement happiness. Economic well-being, however, is only one dimension of overall well-being. Recent surveys summarize the mounting research on overall well-being. And while many studies have explored the determinants of life satisfaction, only a couple have focused directly on the well-being of retirees. And that's, I tell you, that's what I want to talk about here today, because I find it, if you can be happy on $3,000 a month, well, doesn't that lead us all to wonder how can we mimic that? I hope that makes sense. I mean, think about that. Here you have she's not happy. Obviously, she's sad because her husband died. But in terms of the happiness satisfaction rate, where she's saying, I don't have to worry about going and moving in my basement with my kids, and I can still stay in my house and be in my church and be in my community. I don't have to worry about a market decline. At least give satisfaction, if not outright happiness. And it's $3,000 a month. And so my concern is, so many people, and I talked to another lady just today, she's worried about herself, or worried about cat food, worried about the husband dying, and she won't be able to afford anything. And it's just sad, because, and she's still working at 73 years old because she's so worried about running out of money. And I just sit there and I think, we need to not worry so much about this. And I worry actually that we've impugned the level of happiness in retirement if you don't have a lot of money, as if, oh, you're not going to have any, thus you can't be happy. Anyway, so let's get, and it's simply not true. And the research is overwhelming now against that. In fact, we actually have research, not from this study, but basically says the happiest point for retirees is when their income is about $71,000 a year. You know, that's about, what, $6,500 bucks a month or so, $71,000 a year. And that's where people are happiest in retirement. When you make more, what is that song, more money, more problems? I don't even know what it is, but I've heard that before. And that's, I think that's right. But about $71,000 a year. So if you can shoot for a number in retirement, it should be about $6,500 bucks a month. Now, if you don't have a mortgage, more power to you. All right. Labor force status and well-being. According to one study, unemployment is the single most important negative influence on life satisfaction, more important even than divorce. We talked about that just if you got laid, a man in particular, if they got laid off. Another common finding is this is actually really interesting, is relationship between age and happiness varies over the lifespan. It is generally found to be U-shaped. That is higher satisfaction for younger and higher satisfaction for older individuals. So when you're just starting out, you're satisfied. And when you get in the monthly grind or daily grind, you're not satisfied. And then when you hit retirement, you're more satisfied. So a U-shape for retirement. That's I find that very interesting, actually. These two age groups may have more alternatives for the use of their time compared to those in the prime working year. They can go to education, do things in retirement, whatnot. So that was pretty cool. Now, the first study on this was in 1992, Health and Retirement Study, HRS. So a lot of time we'll hear BLS, CES. BLS is Bureau of Labor Statistics. CES is Consumer Expenditure Study. HRS is Health and Retirement Study. These are all wonderful studies that talk all about this, about retirement spending and whatnot. I find them actually fascinating. So the HRS one that came out in 1992, and they've updated it ever since, but it's just wonderful. So the first one, it does find a strong positive relationship between retirement planning and eventual retirement satisfaction. Retirement planning and eventual retirement satisfaction. Isn't that interesting? Because folks who haven't had the chance to plan for the retirement, in particular those who are put out because they are, their job's been outsourced or whatever, all of a sudden they're in retirement, they haven't planned for it. That's not a good place to be for your overall well-being. The list of determinants is limited, but the study finds that annuities from pensions increase retirement satisfaction or reduce the number of depression symptoms. Isn't that interesting? Annuities from pensions, so pensions, increase retirement satisfaction and reduce the number of depression symptoms, while Social Security reliance, as measured by how much Social Security contributes to total income, has no significant effect on either well-being, on well-being. Isn't that interesting? So Social Security, which is the biggest pension in the world, has no effect on well-being in terms of your happiness, but pensions do. Weird, huh? So let's keep diving into that. I find that interesting. And a couple of things I want to point out here is, all right, so this is what it comes up. The having a defined benefit pension plan increases the probability of being in the highest satisfaction category by 5.6% compared to those with no pension. And again, they're using annuities and pensions simultaneously or synonymously. Yeah, synonymously, right? That's the right word. So a pension, you leave work and you get a guaranteed income from your previous employer. You will have that right there will make you happier in retirement, even if Social Security is negative. It's not bad or good, it just is. But having a pension will increase your happiness. Now, here's what's interesting. However, the effect of having just a defined contribution pension increases the probability of being the highest job satisfaction category by 4.6%. So defined contribution plans, a TSP, 401k, 403b. However, the effect of the defined contribution plan is statistically insignificant. But when defined contribution plans are combined with defined benefit plans, the positive effect of having a pension plan jumps 9%, possibly showing that people with more than one plan feel more secure in retirement. Man, so let me just tell you what that says. According to the studies from HRS, Bender, Boston College, and again, this is going back 2005, and I absolutely think it's the same today, given the recent research I've already talked about in previous episodes. If you have a defined benefit plan, i.e. a pension, and you also have a defined contribution plan, i.e. a 401k, TSP or something like that, that's where you're going to be your happiness, because you have two things happening here. Having a defined contribution plan, or having a defined benefit plan, guarantees a steady income flow, but having a defined contribution plan gives participants a chance to have higher income in the future due to good market performance. I 100% think that's correct. So what we don't want to do is annuitize everything so you have a pension, i.e. an annuity, without any upside potential of getting growth in the markets. And then conversely, what we don't want to do is not have any annuity and just hoping the markets give you the growth. We want to combine the two, and there's a significant chance you'll be happier in retirement. Let's keep going on here. I thought this was pretty interesting. Although having a spouse working reduces retirement satisfaction, indicating the spouses prefer the companionship of being retired together. Isn't that interesting? So if you're, and this is going back to this lady I was talking about earlier today, not the widow lady, but this lady, she's still working part-time, I guess, I don't know, 30 hours a week, I guess that is part-time, while she and her husband are quote-unquote retired because she's worried about running out of money. But having a spouse working reduces retirement satisfaction. However, and this actually reduces it by significant magnitudes. They say 19.7%, as a matter of fact. That's pretty significant. So, Joni, you need to go to work because we need to get some income coming in. That's not going to help your retirement satisfaction the least. However, the most influential determinant of the is the voluntariness of the retirement decision. So going back again, if you're forced out, you're not going to be happy in retirement. If you had a chance to plan for it, you will be if you're able to do it on your own. Those who are forced to retire are 30% less likely to report being in the highest satisfaction category, while those who are partially forced to retire are 20% less to be in that category. So being forced out is the biggest bugaboo for folks in retirement happiness. Now, those who are 65 or older report higher well-being. We already talked about that with the U-curve, where the younger and the older folks are happier. Being married, this is critical. Being married makes it more likely that a respondent feels that retirement is better than pre-retirement years, although gender plays no statistically significant effect. Isn't that interesting? So being married and having a spouse not working, where you're spending time together, makes retirees feel better than pre-retirement years. Unlike retirement satisfaction, income and wealth measures have no significant effect on the measure of well-being, although those individuals who have a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan have higher well-being. Again, so a couple things jumping out at me here. You got a defined benefit plan, pension, you got a defined contribution plan, IRA, 401k. You're married and you are able to choose your retirement time. That's critical to happiness. This is and this is what they talk about. Males who are voluntarily retired experience lower retirement satisfaction. Isn't that interesting? That doesn't shock me, at least, because a lot of men find their worth in their business. So conclusion, understanding the factors that determine well-being of retirees is an important economic policy topic. Although most previous studies look at only economic well-being, this study examines the broader measure of well-being to see if other determinants are important. The results show that while economic well-being as measured by income and wealth does increase overall well-being, the effect is relatively small. It is interesting to note that having a defined benefit plan that provides a lifetime annuity has a positive impact on the well-being of retirees compared to having no pension plan or just a defined contribution plan. Isn't that interesting? So what does that tell you? A couple of things going on here. For those, just like my first example, the widow, the fact that she has her expenses covered, even if the annuity isn't that much, and the annuity is a pension and annuity from an insurance company, where she's turning in a deferred account, IRA, into a guaranteed income stream. That's a fact. That will make her happier. But on top of that, we're still leaving some liquid assets out there as well for growth potential, so she doesn't feel like she's missing out. And that's critically important. Now, the thing that she has that stinks is, because her husband's gone, she won't be able to enjoy retirement with him. And that's a big deal, as Bender in the study says, and Javon from BC, Boss College, they say, if you're married, you want to have your spouse not working, and you want to spend time with your spouse, and that'll make you happier. So three things happening. defined contribution on top of defined benefit plan, right? You were voluntarily chose to retire, and you're hanging out with your spouse who's not obligated to work, that you guys are together. And I know that sounds like, oh, that's not true. I don't want my husband running around or my wife running around. It's just, you know, in terms of the studies that Bender has done, also the health and retirement studies and whatnot, I absolutely think that's 100% correct, without question. And there's lots of research on this as well. Notice it doesn't say how much money you need. Oh, if I had $150,000 a year, I'd be happier. It doesn't say anything about that. Well, he says, I'll find that study about what the amount you need for happiness is. They did a study on that. It's at the top of my fingertips. I just can't remember what it is. So just keep that in the back of your mind, my friends. If you want to be happy in retirement and get a guaranteed income source outside of Social Security, be it a pension or an annuity or both. An annuity is a guaranteed income annuity, a single pay immediate annuity, a SPIA. Is what they're called, not a deferred annuity that can give you some income every now and again. You want a guaranteed monthly income that you can't outlive. Pension from work, another one too. That's another guaranteed annuity that you can't outlive. Social Security is one as well, but Social Security is already factored in this because people say that's what I'm expecting to get. So their expectations are high on Social Security that it doesn't give them any positive or negative in terms of overall well-being. You want to be at home with your spouse as well. So you want to be a volunteer on your own, have a defined contribution plan and a defined benefit plan, and you want to be at home with your spouse without being forced to work. Those are three things right there, my friends. Isn't that pretty interesting? So I hope you find this interesting. I do. I love this stuff. I could talk about it all day long. Again, that's the Keith Bender and Natalia Javon. Bender's pretty notorious for this kind of stuff. I don't even know if he's at Boston College anymore. Frankly, I'm not sure he's alive. I don't know, but haven't seen his stuff for a couple of years, so it'll be interesting to find out. But more up to come on this. If you like what you hear, by all means, subscribe, put comments or whatever, just, you know, the 5-star thing, whatever. Put the comments in there of what you want to hear, what this show is doing for this podcast. Don't forget to go to the blog at heritagewealthplanning.com. And then don't forget to go to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/heritagewealthplanning. youtube.com/heritagewealthplanning. I do a video a day there, and then probably a blog post 5 days a week, and then podcast, try to do 1 or 2 a week. Also, there might have an email list too. So if you go to heritagewealthplanning.com, sign up for the email list. I try to do 3 or 4 emails a week on various topics like this, as a matter of fact. So if you want to be get the up-to-date info, let me know. I'll be happy to get you on the list. All right. So my song of the day, this is going to be called Nights Like These by a band called Lucero. They just came up on my Facebook feed because they're coming to Atlanta here, I think, in a couple months. And I've been a huge fan of Lucero. I got probably all their albums. I think it's 10. It's just a rock and roll, I don't want to say folksy, Americana rock, I guess. I don't even know how to describe it, but just a great band. I'd say 60% of their songs are fantastic, 40% not so much. And that's typical, actually, for my taste. There's not that many albums that come to mind where every song is great. But one song I love by Lucero is a song called Nights Like These. And I just want to share with you, man, you got to listen to the song. It's just awesome. And the one lyric is, oh, man, this lyric, jeez. It's just whoever is a songwriter is just a genius. The beer tastes like blood, and my mouth is numb. I can't make the words I need to say. She had a weakness for writers, and I was never that good at words anyway. Oh, man, what a lyric. What a wonderful lyric. I just love it. The beer tastes like blood, and my mouth is numb. I can't make the words I need to say. She had a weakness for writers, and I was never that good at words anyway. So you think about this guy. The ladies leave him, and he's going probably some other guy. And he's like, man, if I could just grasp something to say to keep her, if I just could, but I can't. And so he's drinking the beer and just, it's like blood. He's like bleeding out. He's like, just lonely and nights like these. Ah, what a great song. And it's nights like these, the sad songs don't help. It's not like these, your heart's with someone else. It's not like these, I feel like giving up. It's not like these, I don't seem to count for much. Basically, he knows his girlfriend there is off to greener pastures with some other dude. And then he goes, and now I've only got this one wish that was good enough to make you forget the only boy who ever broke your heart, because nights like these tear me apart. So just what a wonderful song. Sad, actually. We've probably all been through there. Like, man, that guy broke your heart, lady, and I'm here, but you're still thinking about that guy. And I wish I had the words to say it, but I don't. And so because of that, I'll never be able to get you away from your thoughts on this other guy. And it's a great song. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. So Lucero, Nights Like These. I'm not sure off the album it's on. I forgot off the top of my head, but I hope you enjoy it. See you next time on the Josh Gamlin Podcast. Thanks, guys.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.